hello, my dears. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. Hope everyone is doing well in this continuously chilly winter for most of us. Again, we're on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Podcast, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, we always love it. If you could give us some stars, give us some feedback, get us bumped up in the ratings so that more people can find out about, hey, how'd you get that music job? We talk to the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music industry, finding out exactly how they got to where they are today. What obstacles did they face? What challenges did they face? What decisions did they make? How'd they start out in their careers? All that good stuff. And also usually have a really, really good inside track to what's coming down the pike in terms of the music industry. Last episode was no exception. I had the remarkable pleasure of speaking with Sherry Hu. She is a music and tech journalist and a really interesting career trajectory. Started out as a classical pianist, beautiful songwriter, and now she is again sort of on the cutting edge of music and tech, looking at all the innovations coming down the pike. She is really, really interesting and insightful. So I urge you to go back and listen to that episode if you haven't had a chance to already. My guest this week is the amazing Matthew Mayer. He is a pianist. He is an incredible songwriter. He has won numerous international, very prestigious awards. He's released numerous albums to wide acclaim. He has charted number one on Billboard, and he also happens to work full time. Oh, and I should also mention he's a podcaster, he's a blogger, he runs a website. So he's a very busy man, but he's going to actually tell you how he does it. And it is just another signifier about the music industry today that location or pursuit of other businesses or things of that nature do not actually exclude you anymore from having a very successful music career. And Matthew is going to share all about that. But before we do that, I want to play one of Matthew's beautiful piano pieces. This is called Beyond. Welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here. Thank you.
Me too. Tell me your first memories of music. I want to hear about your household, what you remember growing up.
Oh, that's a great question. One of my first memories in music specifically was at my grandma and grandpa's house for Christmas. And I was in a grade school, and they gifted me this little keyboard. And I remember it was the first time I had like played a keyboard. And I remember learning Silent Night. I believe it's G-A-G-E. And I just remember doing that. I was like, this is so cool. And figuring it out. And, I grew up in a very small town, about 700 people in South Dakota. And I have two brothers, older, younger. I am the deprived middle child. So all the middle children out there, listen to this. I feel your pain. I feel it.
I'm a middle child too.
So. Oh, that's why I liked you so much right off the bat. Awesome. You know exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So I was the deprived middle child. Just kidding. I had a great upbringing. And I started playing piano when I was 12 years old and took a couple years lessons, and composition was something that kind of made sense to me. And ever since I was 12, the piano and music has just played a central part of my life since then.
Wow. Were you doing like classical piano lessons, or what were those like?
Yeah, I started, it was funny because my piano teacher literally lived right across the street. His name was Art Cooper. He started me out really, it was an Older's beginner book. And he actually started me out with like ragtime pieces and really pushed me hard out of the gate, like with Alley Cat, some classical pieces. But he would also take simple song and then he would transform it and play like every note on the keyboard. And to me as a kid, I was like, that is so freaking cool, man. Like, I can't believe you can do that on a piano. And so I really give him a lot of credit, because to your question on classically trained or not, I did have classical training, but he really kind of allowed me to be creative out of the gate. And I think that was very important.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it almost sounds like, you know, more of a kind of jazz improv training.
Yeah, it was in a lot of memorization and a lot of, you know, utilizing your hands. You know, in ragtime, there's a lot of jumping around in that left hand and getting comfortable with that and, you know, just pushing that. I have so much respect for those jazz players out there. They, you know, I'm not as trained in jazz, but wow, that's a whole new language. And what they can do is phenomenal. So I had a little bit of that, but overall, you know, started with classical, but he really branched me out and spread my wings in composition, which was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's very unique, and that does make such a difference. I had a classical piano upbringing and.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And it was just very rigorous and very, as you well know, you follow every notation on the page, you follow every dynamic. It has to be played exactly how it is written. And when I was in high school, I started doing improv jazz, you know, working with a jazz teacher. And I was like trying to learn Chinese. Like I just couldn't. Yeah. I was like, what do you mean I have to come up with something on my own? You know? What do you mean there's no sheet music?
Right.
So it was definitely, I kind of wish I had more of that, what you're describing of the sort of more kind of freestyle composition, improv type of background. I think I would have taken more risks.
That is a great point. I love that word that you used, risks. I think it took me a while to feel comfortable in taking risks. And I think it takes, unfortunately, I think that's what, you know, kids or people starting out, it's almost like if we're not careful, we can be afraid of risks in music. And that's almost counterintuitive to what music is, right? I mean, music should be about creativity. I think that's a really good point that you bring up, because I've never really thought of it in terms of that word before. And you should be allowed. Now, of course, you should. You know, I always looked at classical training as you're learning the rules, but mm-hmm. I might be a little bit of a rebel in that and saying, well, yep, there's rules and there's backbone to compositions, but who says that those can't be broken? So I love that. I love that comparison you just made with, how long did you take classical training for?
I took it for almost 20 years.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really screwed me up.
Do you think it did? Do you think
it did?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't do music for decades after that. Really,
wow.
I just was so like, I couldn't. If I wasn't gonna be a classical pianist, I was so intimidated that I couldn't imagine doing my own music. So it was just like, all right, well, then there's really no point to this.
I think that's just just how you said that with risk. I just think there's a lot to, I think there's a lot to unpack there, because I think what you're saying is a great point about, again, you probably were, I can't imagine, I mean, 20 years of classical training, that's awesome. And like you said, it's amazing, like to even hear you say that, after all of that training, that you would have a doubt in creating something beyond that, I really think can challenge the way in which we teach kids and in which we teach people music. And hopefully that changes. I'm with you. I know exactly what you're saying, and I think it's a very good point.
But I love this teacher that you had, because he really, you know, was kind of outside the box. And especially encouraging you to do composition. So tell us more about that. So now you're in your teens.
Yep.
And you're doing composition. And are you doing this in high school? Or are you joining bands? Or what does that look like?
Yeah. So really, I took lessons from art for about 2 years, and then for about a half year with somebody else, and then about 2.5 years. So going into high school, you know, that's when you get involved in a small school. You got to, you know, I was in football, I was in basketball, I was in baseball. So you had to basically be in everything because it's such a small town. So I didn't do the lessons. And I really, in high school, I didn't take any lessons, and I just started composing. I just wrote my own stuff. And it was really pivotal, because if I were to get on a personal note here a little bit and what music meant to me in that time frame of my life, you know, I grew up later in grade school. I was the overweight kid. I was not the popular kid. You know, I was, you know, kind of one that was teased for being, you know, mom had to shop in the Husky section, all this stuff. Yeah. And then I found this thing with the piano, and it gave me this new life. It gave me this confidence that I didn't have before. And so from that, and then obviously, you know, going into high school, I had my growth spurt, and then, you know, grew out of that. But I built up that confidence a lot through composition and through piano. And then my senior year, actually, my parents had divorced, and I channeled basically for 9 months, about almost every night. It was right when there was a computer program where you could start to notate music. And I took 9 months, I wrote a 14 piece band instrument called The Passing of Time, where I played the piano. And then we had 14 different band instruments, and we played it at our spring concert.
Oh, wow.
That was in this, yeah, not to date myself, but that was in 1996.
So this was an orchestral piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like our band, we didn't really have an orchestra, but we had band, you know, we had flutes, clarinets, trumpets, trombones. Yeah. So I wrote for each instrument in the background of my piano piece, and really channeled everything, you know, really channeled that tougher year into this composition. And it was played once at the, for the last song at the spring concert, and it's never been played since.
Aww.
So
it was a world premiere, and it was a one time.
It was. It got great news coverage in the state, and it was really fun. But it just,
that's amazing.
It really was. I look back on that and I just cherish that. It was, for me, it was taking something tough going on in my life and creating something. And I think that's what music is all about, you know, creating. And I think that's why I love composition so much. So
that's great. I love that. So what did you decide to do about college? Did you go to a music school, or what did that look like?
Yeah. So I went to the University of South Dakota, and I started out as a music major. And to be honest, I had some bad experiences. One was with a certain music teacher that it just wasn't very encouraging at all, almost intimidating. And I was getting good grades, but I just didn't feel like the music major path was for me. I ended up switching to a business major. So I got my undergraduate and graduate in business. But I think some of that goes along what we were talking about in the beginning, is music education as a whole. I think there's just opportunity. I think there's opportunity to, how do you foster kids' creativity and still teach what is good in music schools to teach, but also encourage and let that creativity blossom. And I think that's, as a someone that almost got their music minor, I still took music classes throughout college. I think that is something that's missing in our system, at least where I went anyway. Now, there were some great teachers and there were some great courses, and I still got a lot out of it, but that was my experience anyway, that I just felt like I wouldn't necessarily, if I wasn't going to be a music teacher or a classical performer, to your point, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my options were limited with what I could do with that degree overall. So I felt restricted going in, and I ultimately changed to business.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, I'll do an informal poll with my guests, and it's completely almost 50-50 about whether or not you actually need to go to music school.
Yeah, right.
You know, everyone has such a different experience.
That's right.
And no two are alike. And it's not even a question of better or worse. It's just different.
That's exactly right. I like your point about it's not better or worse. It's what is fitting with that individual and what they need. You know, there might, I absolutely, to your point, I mean, I would love to pretend that I am like the best piano player out there. And I don't even come close to that, because I mean, there are just some amazing, amazing piano players out there. I could have definitely probably benefited for more training in all sorts of disciplines of music. However, for me at that time, it wasn't fitting my story, and it wasn't fitting my style and passion. So I like how you said it's not better or worse. It's what makes sense. And it's what's, you know, benefiting you as you look at your holistic self.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially now, and we'll get into this a little later, but yep. I think now that the paradigm of the music business and the music industry has shifted so much,
right,
that everything's kind of out the window. And now it's like, sure, you're a musician, but do you have a good head for business? Are you right. A good marketer? Do you know how to brand yourself? Do you know how to be an entrepreneur? It's all these things that would have been kind of unthinkable 20, 30 years ago.
That's exactly right. I agree 100%. 100%.
Yeah. So tell us, what did you end up doing with the business degrees? What was your first kind of foray into the business world?
Well, it was, you know, I've had a very interesting career timeline. So I had a mentor in college, and his name was Doc Farber. And he was an older retired professor. And it was like a Tuesdays with Maury friendship, but for two or three years, I'd go over to his house almost nightly, and he had a tremendous, he really took an interest into my music, and he had a tremendous, they called him the Farber Boys. And it was really, he was a mentor to Tom Brokaw. He was a mentor to Pat O'Brien at CBS. He's been a mentor Wow. to a lot of the senators of South Dakota. And I was lucky to have his mentorship, and he saw something in me that I don't think I saw in myself at a young age. And he really opened the door for me to call up Pat O'Brien at the time, who was the host of Access Hollywood at NBC in Los Angeles. And he had called him up to ask if I could apply for an internship program. And he had put a good word in for me to apply. And I sent my application in, and I got it accepted to do an internship at Access Hollywood there in Burbank. So going into 2001, I started out with a non-paid 2-month internship in Burbank at NBC. Granted, I come from a town of 600 people. So going from that to going to working at NBC, where you're meeting stars every night on interviews, it was amazing. It was an amazing transformation. It was amazing. It was just an absolutely amazing experience. And I saved everything I had. I didn't have anything to my name. And as you know, rent out there in LA is not the cheapest. So luckily, after 2 months of working really, really hard, they hired me. And I worked for 2 years. First year was a research runner. So that's a very popular way of saying that you were on the bottom of the totem pole and you did everything that, you know, getting a lot of papers and making a lot of coffee. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about a year. And here, you know, this is after I have my degree. So mind you, when you graduate from college, you automatically think, oh, I graduated with a business degree. I'm going to be getting paid so many thousands of dollars a year. And no, that's not what happened for me anyway. But I was never afraid of not to boost myself up here, but I was never afraid of hard work. And I literally had to get to the trailer before 5 a.m. I had to get the LA Times, New York Times, all the publications. Every producer had a set trade that I had a list. I had a, you know, I had it on their desk by the time their producers got in. The executive producer got in at 5:45. So I had everything set up for him before he got in. So I literally started from the ground up, and I did that for 1 year. I mean, when you think about delivering papers for 1 year, that's a humbling experience, because it's not like it's, now on the flip side of that, I had a chance to go on any interview I wanted to go on. And, you know, I'd be sitting in a room and there's, you know, Tom Hanks right there. I'd be sitting in a room and here comes Larry King, and or Lance Bass needed a ride to the studio. I mean, I met so many stars, but at the same time, it was an unbelievable world. And then after that year, I got a promotion to be one of the senior producers' assistants. And then I got to go, you know, on bigger shoots, like I had an opportunity to go to the Oscars and to the Grammys. And it was just a phenomenal experience. But again, you know, living in LA, everything you're making is basically going back to rent. So it was two years of soaking in just absolutely amazing experiences, but also building really, really good friendships and relationships in that industry, whether it be media, whether it be, and these are people that I stay in touch with today, even though it's been many, many years. But it's funny how you talk about music and business. And not to take us off on a tangent, but it's just, I'm just talking out loud here, as I can talk about this stuff all day. So if I'm going off too much, just let me know. But
no, this is great.
But what you're talking about, do you know the business side of it? And the other thing I would add to that is, do you know how to build relationships? And you know how to build true business relationships, professional relationships, you know, and how to nurture those and how to build off those, because that's so, as you know, it's so important. It's so important in this industry, especially when an example of you being in this for so long and myself, this is a long-term journey. This is a long-term journey for you creatively, musically. And so if you're in it for the short term and just plan on building short-term relationships, that's probably not going to last. So I was learning all the importance of all those things. And I was really lucky. I was really fortunate. So that's a long-winded answer to your question about...
No, it's great. Great, because I think it all applies, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It has all come full circle. So
what made the decision to leave? Like, what was the turning point?
I had a chance. So I left after my undergrad. So I had a chance to go back to graduate school. There was really multiple factors. One was to go back to graduate school at a discounted tuition. I applied to get my MBA back in South Dakota. And I had a really good deal to do that. My younger brother was still in high school and was doing really great and wanted to be, was kind of missing out on all of his events, number two. And number three, it was this realization of, I am meeting all these wonderful, amazing people, but am I maximizing the resources to continue my music, to continue my writing, to continue on to my goals? And I didn't necessarily get clouded by it, but I saw myself, if I wasn't careful, starting to actually put my music to the side more, as opposed to hold on here. Don't forget why ultimately what's driving this is your music and your goals musically. And I just found myself, I was working really hard, but I didn't necessarily have this lifestyle of continuing to write music and, you know, living in a studio apartment for 2 years where your refrigerator is basically the size of a quarter of the size of my refrigerator now, because you can't, I mean, it's amazing what you know, and I don't come from money or anything. So there's a lot of sacrifice in that. And I wanted to get my MBA. And then after the MBA, it led to an opportunity to get a really good job here in the Midwest. And not only in the Midwest, but in Omaha, where I live now, to where I can easily travel. Omaha's got a great airport. They're, you know, right in the center of the United States. So I can easily get to, you know, there's a nonstop flight to LA now, actually going out to LA next week, or, you know, nonstop to New York. I can go anywhere. My quality of living is good. And I actually found that after I moved out of LA, I was actually writing more music and doing more with my creative goals. So that's really what led me out of it. It was awesome. It was hard for me to leave, but I had to kind of take a step back and say, hold on, Matt, what are your goals here? And can you be achieving them in another
way? So tell me, when you were in college and then you graduated, well, and you were doing this internship, et cetera, was music, and even though you weren't majoring in music, was the goal to do something in music always first and foremost? Like, how did you kind of keep that on the front burner, at least in your mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my junior year of college is when I released my first CD. So it was my first album was in 1999. So exactly 20 years ago, I released my first album and it did well on my college. It got a lot of support. And so I did a couple live shows there and it really boosted me up to keep the writing going. I didn't know how to come out with a CD then. I had no clue. When I look back and I see how much I paid for the CMYK, film to make just the cover, it's just ridiculous, because now you can just go through Disc Makers or, CD Baby, but they didn't have it back then. So you just,
right.
I was just, I always knew I wanted to come out with an album. I always knew I wanted to do that. I wasn't old enough to go into a bar and have a beer, but I figured out how to come out with an album. So I did that.
Nice.
And, that led to another one, which led to me saying to myself, I liked to see a product that came from a composition that came from nothing. And it's now out there. And that was very gratifying for me. It wasn't making me, any money. But it was just so, I didn't care about that. I just cared about making music and getting it out there.
That's so great because it sounds like it was instead of, well, this has to take priority or this has to be put away. It sounds like it was just parallel.
It was very much parallel. It was very much parallel. Exactly.
Which is huge, which is so huge. And a lot of people, including myself, couldn't, at least not in the time, I couldn't do it.
Yep.
So that's really huge. So, and I really want to talk to you more about this because I think it's really important. This idea of supporting your art, creative work versus the B job, the having to support yourself. And
yep.
Read a number of music business publications, and there's a number of them that are like, well, you can't really make it in music unless you quit your day job.
Right.
And just set out and you do whatever it takes. And when I'm reading that, I'm thinking, yeah, but you had to write a book. You know what I mean? Like you had to write a book. Don't tell me that your music was so successful. Like I know you more because of your book. I don't know you as an artist. Right.
Yes.
So, and that's no disrespect or anything.
No, I really
do appreciate these publications and I've gotten a lot out of them, but I do think that model is going away. And I think also because of technology and it's still the Wild West. We still kind of don't know where we're headed. It's a case of, and I know you know this, I'm just sort of saying this for the sake of our listeners, but I'd mentioned in a previous podcast, I heard an interview with David Crosby and he was like, Spotify cut my income in half. And then on the flip side, you hear artists that are saying, especially obviously new and upcoming artists that say, I have like over 2 million streams on Spotify.
Right.
And I will never be on the Grammys or Billboard or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's kind of these like two worlds kind of duking it out right now. And so I think that you need to have a more out of the box creative approach to music and to your career, especially now.
Right.
Instead of sort of clinging onto an old model of, well, I'm just going to couch surf and I'm just going to like sleep in my car.
Right.
And hope that some A&R dude will discover me playing on Hollywood Boulevard and finally give me that break.
Right.
That I've been waiting for. So that's my long-winded way of getting, because I really want to talk to you about how you've been successfully able to manage this amazing music career, as well as having a very healthy and prosperous quote unquote day job.
Yeah, no, I, First of all, I just so much appreciate your view on that, because I couldn't agree with you more on so many of the points you just made. It's funny because I just published, CD Baby actually published the article, but they picked up, I wrote an article that CD Baby published on this topic that you talked about. And it was called Five Myths of Being a Musician with a Day Job. And everything you just said is exactly right. So again, I'll try to stay focused, but I get so passionate on this subject. So I could talk all night. And if I do, just tell me, Matt, you got to cut it off. So
no, you're great. Keep going.
So first of all, what you said about thinking outside the box, and I want to take that a step further. I totally agree that I think a lot of times, and I'm going to talk about my own insecurity a little bit that I've, as an artist, that I've had, is sometimes placing a label on myself and limiting myself creatively. And what I mean is this, it's one of my myths in the article, that you're not necessarily a musician or creative if you have, you know, a 9-to-5, 8-to-5, or whatever you work. I think it's easy for a creative person like myself, again, I'm only speaking on myself, to start to doubt, you know, well, I'm making more money over here in my day job. I must not be successful in music because I'm not making as much money, or it's not catching on as fast as I thought it was going to be. And so I'm not really a professional musician, or I'm not really good enough to do this. And that's totally false. We put that in our heads who made that rule? Number one. Now, if you think of it outside the box and you look at this other thing that you're doing as it could be a source of income. It could be a source of key relationships. It could be a source of emotional support, getting you off that couch from couch surfing a little bit. It can be the source of so much more positivity. And then taking that and using that into your creative passion can actually help you flourish in that creativity. So again, not to go off here, but that's one example of looking at it just because. So for example, for me, I actually work in human resources. And so when people are like, what the heck, like you have 12 piano albums out, but you work in human resources, like who are you? What do you make no sense. I'm like, yeah, I probably don't make a lot of sense, but on the outside, it looks like those two worlds don't mesh well at all. It even had to take me a while, but I've worked in quote unquote, you know, corporate world, quote unquote, for almost 15 years now. But I can tell you, because I didn't come from money, because I didn't come from having anything financially handed to me, I utilized a whole different degree, and I tried to be as successful as I could in my other career. And that only helped me, you know, fuel financially if I wanted to come out with a CD, or helped me support me with benefits, or my family with benefits, or whatever. There was all these benefits that are happening because of that. But I think we get in our heads, well, no, you're not, you know, you're not going to make it because you can't do both, or which again, you can. It may take a little while longer, but you can do it. It's hard work, and it's staying consistent throughout years. So I'll stop right there for now, but I could go off on this, but that's one kind of example in which of my lifestyle that I balance.
Well, talk to me a little bit more. I think one of the key aspects, and I'd love for you to expand on this, is work ethic and time management, because the light bulb went off when you were talking about your internship and being on the job at 5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
And you're showing up for them.
Right.
How do you show up for yourself in the same way as an artist? Because I think that is, speaking from experience, that is extremely difficult. And I'm one of those people that if you want something done, I will drop everything and do it for you.
Yeah.
When I need something done for myself, it's, oh, I can do it tomorrow. Oh, you know what? Let me do this first. Yeah. You know, I will hide behind checking email. I will hide behind...
Yes. Yes.
Updating my social media, whatever it is. And I really do have to be very ruthless about that and treating myself as the artist. So I want to hear from you about that, because I think that would be so valuable for our listeners.
I think you hit on, that is such a good point. I struggle with the exact same thing, because you're right. Yeah. You show up a certain way for others, but are you showing up the same way for yourself? So I look at that as in where are you? I think first there's a lot to that. So first is just, you may have to kind of give yourself some affirmations. And I'm speaking to myself. Like, I might have to give myself some affirmations, like, Matt, you know, what you create is important. Don't let it die. Do what you need to do to continue to push this through. Whether it's, I got to finish another podcast episode, because I also have a podcast, and I know how much work goes into every single podcast episode. You know, you record the podcast, then you got to edit it. And then if the levels aren't right, I mean, there's so much more than just the conversations that your listeners are hearing here. You are spending late nights doing that and then get another interview set up, but you got all these other things. And so putting that priority on yourself is very important. Number one. Number two is, I always talk about time versus energy. Where are you spending your energy? So in the article, I gave an example of after work, are you spending the next 2 hours after work at happy hour with your friends? And I stopped there and I said, there's nothing, I love happy hours. There's nothing wrong with happy hours. Actually, they're very healthy for you, if you know, especially emotionally when you need some of that. But if you're doing happy hours every single night, you know, you can't complain to yourself that you don't have time, because that's where your energy's going. As opposed to if after work you're going to say, okay, got done with this job, these next 2 hours, I've got 2 hours, whatever. Maybe you're going to go work out. And then the next hour, if you only have an hour that night, just one goal, saying, I'm going to update my mailing list, even though I hate doing that, or I'm going to schedule 5 social media posts this week in just this 1 hour. That's all I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. It may seem like you didn't do anything that night, but you absolutely did. And so what I don't talk about in the article, so going back to that, another example, I love certain shows on Netflix. I tease about this all the time. I can get trapped in a Netflix series and I'm done for. I'm on the couch. I am being the worst dad. I'm being the worst, you know, I'm just being horrible, because that's all I'm doing. I'm watching TV. I love shows on Netflix, but I can't complain about not having time if I'm watching shows on Netflix. Now, my argument is, if you were to spend your energy doing these things that are going towards your goal, that's only going to give you more energy. That's only going to feed into this cycle of more creativity. So if I come home and I'm like, oh yeah, it feels good to launch a podcast episode, right? Because you put a lot of work into it, you launch it, and now it's out there. You did it. Well, that's only going to boost you up and give you confidence for another one. Or maybe there's one email that you've put off all week, and it's just responding to that one email. Just doing those couple things, you actually are being productive. So the thing I don't talk about in that article, but then I highlight in a separate podcast episode, is now take a step back. Now pretend it's 20 years from now. All of a sudden, if you look at your life from not day to day, saying, well, if I don't accomplish these 10 things tonight, then I failed. You are putting so much pressure on yourself. And the fact of the matter is, there are plenty of nights where I don't do anything. There's plenty of nights where I sit and I watch TV. Like, that's okay, you know? But then it's like, okay, so tomorrow, can I get back on the saddle here? I'm going to accomplish this one thing. I'm going to turn that into two. I'm going to schedule some things into my calendar. I don't have to tear myself up and have a stressful life over it, but I can focus my energy on the right things. And when you start doing that, you start to create your own time. So again, I'm going off on a tangent here, but
no, this is what I want. This is amazing. And I think it's so important. And I'm wondering if you can just talk about everything I want, because I really want my listeners to know, like, this is possible.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if you can literally tell them everything, including the family, that you have three kids.
Yep. I have three children. And I, you know, have a full-time job and
right. You've got a podcast.
I've got a podcast. I run a website called solopiano.com. We have about 350 piano artists from around the world on there. Yesterday, we just announced our nominations for Album of the Years on there. I curate the solopiano.com playlist on Spotify, which has about 1200 followers on there. Released 12 albums and just coming out with my first single, this in scheduled for March 1st, hopefully March or April, but that was just announced today. So I'm really excited about that. You know, published, got my first blog published on CD Baby. So there's just a lot of things going on. And to be clear, it doesn't mean that I am, like, you know, kicking butt in all of these things. I'm just doing my best in things that I'm passionate about, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. But I love that. And I think it's so important because, again, it is possible. And I really do believe that it has to be a shift from the time thing to the energy thing. I think that, I don't know about you, but I think that that is so essential, because when it's a time thing, then I feel very oppressed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
But when it's an energy thing, it feels much more empowering.
Yes.
And it's like, no, this is good for me. Like, this is something that's going to benefit me versus, oh God, I don't have enough time. Right?
Exactly. I love that word, that oppressed, and it's your perspective on it. Going back to your energy or benefiting you, when you're doing something that, even if you don't necessarily love it, but it's something productive towards something that you love, you start to forget about time. You start to forget about, you know, I'm right now, I am very engaged and loving this topic of conversation with you in this moment. You know, I haven't looked at my watch. I have no clue how much time's gone by, but time is not a factor for me right now. I'm involved in a constructive conversation. This conversation, I hope, will lead to us staying in touch throughout, you know, past this podcast, and maybe someone will hear this and maybe that'll lead to something else. And all these exciting things could just happen off of this one little spark. And that's because the energy into it just kind of feeds more energy. So I love that distinction that you use between oppressed as opposed to this perspective of gratitude and fulfillment. And the more I put into it, the more that I'm producing on my own.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm wondering, speaking of time, we are going to start wrapping up, but I'm wondering if you can speak on the financial freedom that has been given to you, because I think that that's another huge aspect that a lot of people overlook. If you're just looking to, like, say, get signed by a label and that the label is going to just provide you with everything, right. I think that that's a very, no matter who you are, I think that that's a very dangerous road to be on. So I'm wondering if you can talk about that.
Absolutely. That's a great question. So when I think about financial freedom, I think about money a lot of times in freedom to choose, freedom of options. And I'll break that down more. I am not a millionaire. I am not this wealthy individual. But what I have done from a financial perspective is I have tried to get rid of any debts possible, because debts to me mean less choices, less freedom. And so I like how you tied that into giving somebody else a choice over your life. So when you gave the example earlier of an A&R person or hope to get discovered by an A&R person or I hope that someone else will do this, when you have freedoms and choices, you can make those on your own behalf. And you don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to have, but if you're, instead of, if you have come, let's say you've gotten a couple $100 extra in your pocket and you don't have a car payment where you don't have to pay that couple $100, guess where that money can go? That money can go to your creative goal. It can go to hosting your website for the next year. It could go to you getting the best podcast hosting service possible for a year. That's just off of one car payment. And then you start to add all these things up and you're like, hold on here. So for financials, for me, and again, going back to having a good, not only a good day job, but also budgeting, you know, living below your means has actually let me live above my means creatively. So that's how I would kind of wrap up that financial and what that translates to somebody else. That's everyone's different on that. So, but hopefully that'll just kind of spark some thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to be continued.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell people how they can follow you, how they can find you, Spotify, website, social media, that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you. You know, please follow me on Twitter at Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, Solo Piano. So that's M-A-Y-E-R, S-O-L-O-P-I-A-N-O. Same thing on Instagram, Mayer Solo Piano. Same thing on Facebook, Mayer Solo Piano. Yes, please, if, you know, for all listeners, I would love, love, love if you followed and hooked up on Spotify, Matthew Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, especially if you're working or studying and you just need some piano music in the background, I would be just so grateful for that. And L-A-R-E-L, I am so grateful for you. And I loved, you know, getting to know more about you and the guests that you have on this podcast, and congratulations to your podcast success. And I just think it's so cool, the topics that you're talking about, because they are topics that all of us as musicians need to keep in the forefront and start thinking outside of the box. It is still the Wild West when it comes to streaming and how music is getting out there and having to think much more beyond just being a musician. So I'm just so grateful for the invitation to be on.
Oh, absolutely. And before you go, what is your podcast? Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. So my podcast is called The Going Solo Podcast. So it's going just on iTunes, just search Going Solo. My last episode was on this article that we just talked about with debunking the five myths. I have guests on there as well. We've got some Grammy nominated guests on there, Grammy award winning guests on there, people that are kind of doing along the same lines and along some of the same subject matter that you're talking about. So please check it out.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, Matthew. I so appreciate you being on the show. I think that this is going to be a really big treat for everyone.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
My special thanks to Matthew Mayer for being on the podcast, despite his incredibly busy life, as we all just heard about. And again, making me in particular realize that I really don't have any excuse when it comes to pursuing a music career. So special thanks again to Matthew. Again, follow him on social media at Mayer Solo Piano. His website is Matthew Mayer, MAYER.com. And please do follow him on Spotify, Matthew Mayer. Again, everyone, thank you so much for continuing to listen and support us through another year, 2019. I am your host, L. Ariel, and I can be found on social media at L-A-R-I-E-L Music. My website is L-A-R-I-E-L-Music.com. I am also on the Spotify. Just look for L.Ariel. I can't remember if I gave out the website for the podcast, but it's musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on social media at musicjobspodcast. So give us a follow, give us a shout out, and we'll try to say hello back. Okay, my loves. So keep on trucking through this chilly, chilly winter wherever you are. And again, keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.